an engaging faith. I'm your host, Elizabeth Reardon, here on You Supported Real Life Radio. It is so wonderful to be here today as we share and discuss what it is to understand our faith more deeply and to live that faith out in the world around us. Now, today's show, we have the lovely Margaret Felice. And if you are listening in and wish to call in, the number is 855-949-1380. Now, after an appearance in Carmen, the Boston Musical Intelliger wrote, Margaret Felice, with her drop-dead beautiful voice, was ideal as Michaela. Recent roles include Abigail Williams from The Crucible, La Ciesca, and Donna Elvira from Don Giovanni. She has been a finalist in New Hampshire Opera Idol and the Little Italy Soprano Competition, a semi-finalist in the Peter Elvins Vocal Competition, a NATS District winner, and was awarded Best Diction at Stelle del Año Nuevo, sponsored by the Italian Consul General in Boston. An artist with a particular interest in sacred music, Margaret shines in oratorio and early music performances. Credits include solo performances in Haydn's Creation, Beethoven's Mass in C, Pergolesi's Stabat Mater, and Carmina Burana. She also sang for 5 seasons with Capella Clausura, a chamber ensemble specializing in early music written by female composers. Now, Margaret is a religion teacher at Boston College High by day, an opera singer slash actress by night. She conducts liturgical choirs, is a blogger, writer, enjoys running, boating, and just got married recently in April. Now, Margaret, did I cover everything?
That was a great walk down memory lane, Elizabeth. Thank you.
You are very welcome. I apologize if I completely brutalize the Italian, but that is not my specialty.
No way. It was perfect. I was very impressed at how well you navigated some of those multilingual sentences.
So a little bit about yourself. You attended Boston College, I know, and we've discussed between the two of us the incredible benefits of a Jesuit education. So why did you consider going to Boston College?
You know, I wish I could say that I had a great master plan. I wish I could attribute it to my own wisdom, but it was really dumb luck and the grace of God that led me to such a special place. I knew I wanted to stay local. I grew up in Northern Connecticut, so I applied to a couple different schools in New England and some with stronger performing programs and some with more general liberal arts programs. And Boston College was the only Catholic school I applied to. It hadn't even really occurred to me, though I'd gone to a Catholic high school. It didn't occur to me that that would be something that was important to me or would be important to me, which I have to look back on now and laugh, because obviously being at a Jesuit Catholic school ended up being such a crucial part of my experience. And being at Boston College has pretty much shaped everything I do every day, from when I wake up in the morning to when I go to bed, is influenced by the fact that I went to a Jesuit school. And it's just such a special place. You know, I was there, I work with one of the choirs there, and I was singing with that group for the reunion weekend just a few weekends ago. And there was a liturgy. There were people from all different anniversary classes, so 5-year, 10-year, 15-year. And I was singing with new friends and old friends, and there were faces I recognized, and I knew half of the Jesuits up on the altar. And I was just overwhelmed with this sense of gratitude. So many people can go so long without ever feeling like they found a home. And I have found such an extraordinary home at BC. I'm very lucky.
And that's what I was going to talk to you about. For those considering colleges, you know, Jesuit colleges offer so much, but I'd be interested to know, what do you think that sets them apart?
What sets Jesuit schools apart? One thing that I always really liked about Catholic schools in general, and I noticed this first when I was at a diocesan high school, back in Connecticut. I went to East Catholic High School. If anyone's listening from Manchester, I went to East Catholic High School in Manchester, Connecticut. And I was struck by the fact that you're in a community where everyone's trying to do the right thing. We don't always succeed, and it's certainly not a utopia, but the community is full of people who have a sense of right and wrong and are really trying to move towards what is right. And that's such a helpful environment to be in at any time in your life, but especially during formative years when you're discovering your own sense of morality and discovering the challenges sometimes and costs of trying to do the right thing. To know that you're not in it alone is so helpful as you mature into someone who can make sacrifices and make difficult choices.
Well,
so that was something that was really magical about my experiences in Catholic schools. And I know, I'm sure there's listeners out there that are thinking, oh my gosh, that's such a pie in the sky, overly optimistic view. And I don't want you to think I'm not a realist. I know how challenging any community can be, but having that priority, having that value is unparalleled.
And that's something I would completely agree with. And I think just taking my undergraduate experience and then looking at my graduate experience, the Jesuit college really, they aim to serve the whole person. And I don't want to generalize that and say that all other colleges don't. But what I noticed in my own experience is that that spiritual component was built into almost everything. Everything we did had that support for the whole person, for how you navigate your life and studies, how you feel a part of a community. What is it that is lifting you up? What is it that's driving you through? What is it that gets you to understand the material and know how to articulate that? I just found that, and I went to an Ivy League undergraduate college, and to say that I felt truly supported by the Jesuit college, more so even, is, I think, a very good mark, a very good kind of honor for their behalf.
I find the Jesuits to be really well suited to facilitating that community that values the whole person and pulling out the different elements of a person's being that need to be tended to. They have such a history of excellence, right? You know, they're brilliant scholars. There are musicians, astronomers, all sorts of Jesuits distinguishing themselves in all sorts of areas. And now that there's such a focus on their lay collaborators, there's also lay men and women within these communities that are distinguishing themselves. But there's always this sense, and I notice this especially in a lot of the work we do at Boston College High School, which is, of course, also a Jesuit school, that along with all the other forms of excellence that we're striving towards, excellence in sports, in art, in your studies, there's a sense of striving for spiritual excellence, which might not be quite the right way of putting it, but an idea that, yes, you can be exceptional at sanctity just as much as you can be exceptional at football. And it's just as important to develop all of those skills and inclinations in each individual.
Yes, and I would add that element of service. So when they're talking about being excellent in A, B, C, or D, because you've been given those gifts, God is also asking you to do more in the community as well.
Agreed. Agreed completely. And
it's kind of like, what are you doing with the talents that you've received?
I agree. And I found, especially in some of the elements of Ignatian pedagogy and even in the spiritual exercises and some of the documents that we get right from the man himself, St. Ignatius, that there is this element of reflection as well. So you are always asking yourself that question. As important as it is to be a contemplative in action, you don't want to always be so active that you're not looking back, evaluating, and charting your course as you need to based on what's revealed to you in prayer and reflection.
Right. And so going back to your experience at BC High, you know, your day job, so to speak, what are those challenges, you know, in trying to relate a contemplative portion to high school students and trying to relate the call to be excelling at all these things? What are some of those challenges?
Well, I think, you know, the easy answer there is the culture, right? You know, we refer to capital C culture, and it's the source of all of our woes. But for better or for worse, we're in it. And what I view as part of my task when I want to encourage students to explore these elements is to just create an atmosphere that allows them to feel free and to feel safe and to do what I can to make it easy for them to pray. You know, I'm working with 13, 14-year-old boys. They're not going to pray the same way that I do. So you have to observe. You have to sometimes be a little crafty in figuring out what sort of prayer experience will engage them. How long should it be? What music should you include? What should you ask them to do? How should you ask them to sit and relax? So all of these things are things that I think about as I'm putting together an opportunity for students, which is one way of encouraging them to prayer, having these specific prayer opportunities. But then you're just trying to create your own mini culture where that's the norm. My colleagues are fantastic, and they model for the students and for me every day what it means to be a thoughtful, loving person. So that really helps, knowing that the whole community is supporting the mission of the school.
Welcome back, and you are listening to An Engaging Faith with Elizabeth Reardon here on Real Life Radio. Now, Real Life Radio is you-supported, and we are so thankful to you as supporters and listeners. Know of someone else who might enjoy listening? Pass it on. Want to find out who you are in this exciting journey of evangelization? Check out realliferadio.com. Now, when we left for break, Margaret was telling us about her experiences teaching religion at BC High and some of the challenges and some of the joys that we have as teachers in kind of passing on that faith, but also calling our students to go deeper. And one of the things that Margaret also does in addition to teaching is, like me, she is a blogger, and her website is margaretfelice.com, but she's also blogged as well on other websites such as The Mudroom. Margaret, can you tell me what they can find on your blog site?
Well, I would love to have folks visit the site. Feel free to reach out through the contact page. Again, it's margaretfelice.com. I sort of came into blogging sideways. I started a blog when I was traveling one summer as a way to keep up with people. And as I was writing, I noticed, even when I got back, you know, I'd write those sort of more like journal, this is what I did today posts. And every couple of weeks, I would write something that was more reflective and spiritual. And I realized that I found myself really called to that. And it wasn't what I expected to do with my writing. I didn't think I even expected to be a quote writer. I didn't expect to do writing. I expected to write a little travel blog until I came home. So I try to comment on current events. I have a pretty, well, I think it's a good habit of wanting to be a little too reflective. So by the time I've reflected on something adequately, the current event has passed me by. But I write about spirituality, identity. I write about music and art. I also was fairly recently diagnosed with Crohn's disease and ended up having a couple of surgeries for that. And I've had a real struggle health-wise. So a lot of my writing has turned towards that, the concept of, you know, incarnation and enfleshment and having a body that's not always working. I write a lot about identity. I think I mentioned that. Who we are, what does it mean to be who we are? What does it mean to be God's children? So I'm sort of all over the map. I break a lot of the blogging rules in that I don't have a specific brand, but I try to just keep sharing myself and engaging people as much as I can. And it's been great. It's brought a lot of really wonderful people and a lot of excellent writing into my life.
Well, I think that's one thing that really comes out very clearly in your blog is your authenticity. You know, yes, you are performing, you're doing what you love, but life is real. And we too must be real. And I think that's what people, that's what they come back and they tune in for. You know, it's wonderful that we enjoy so many blessings and graces in our life, but to also share the sorrows and joys as well. You know, it's both. So recently, I know that you just touched on your Crohn's and your recent surgery, and you spoke about the markers of adulthood, such as financial self-sufficiency, the loss of a parent, or having others rely on you. And then you posed the question, what grew you up? So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, in a way, it's not an entirely fair question because, of course, we're all always maturing. And I think one of the big struggles that I went through during my initial diagnosis, which was just about 3 years ago, and something that I still go back and forth with, is having something take the wind out of your sails like this can be so revelatory. And it revealed to me more about my personal conception of God and sort of the arrangements that I thought I had made with God. If you had asked me 5 years ago, I would have said, no, of course, you know, bad things happen to good people. And of course, these things happen, you can do all the right things, and that you still might end up having a really hard time of it. So I could have said all those things, but I didn't really know them, you know them in my bones. And to be confronted with the fact that I definitely had a conception of God as someone who would reward me, that by having done all of the right things, I had somehow earned blessings. I had earned an easy life. And it really took a long time. And there are times when it still pops up for me. It took a long time to work through that misconception and get to know God in a new way as someone who blesses me in ways that I might not have expected. So part of what grew me up, I guess, was learning that lesson, not the specific lesson about my particular conception of God, but knowing something in a way that I hadn't known it before, when I thought I knew it, but now I know it more.
Exactly. And there's that whole connection that I noticed profoundly, that the Jesuits really instilled in me, is that reflective component to writing and thinking as a part of our spirituality. So one of the burning questions that I considered before I ever started blogging is, why do we blog? Why? What is it that about it that empties ourself or fills us up or serves us to guide as we guide others? Did you wrestle with that as well?
It's been sort of an ongoing question I ask myself, and one that, frankly, I try not to dwell on too much, because I do find that just the act of producing is something that resonates with people when I don't want to agonize so much over my motivations that I don't offer what I have. And you mentioned before my authenticity. I don't mind admitting that part of me blogs for attention because I am an extrovert and you want people to read your stuff and you want people to comment and you want that sort of engagement. So I don't mind admitting that that is one of my less pure motivations. But, you know, we get personalities. We are who we are and it, what we do with them and how we sort of turn them into service for the world, I think is sort of the marker of how we've lived our lives. And so I have accepted the fact that I really like attention and try to be fair and as eloquent as I can be and clear and touch on things that matter to people and just give what I have. And I've been really astonished at the way that some of the things that I've written have really hit home with others when ultimately all I can do is write my truth. All I can do is write, in a sense, for myself. And I've been lucky that what I write for myself is also something for other people. I think that's a good sign that you're doing something you're meant to be doing in all aspects of vocation.
I agree. And one of the things that I noticed that sometimes the posts that I felt like I most needed to write that I felt were a part of myself came through very clearly and had the most response. And I also noticed that part of that whole writing experience that we were discussing, that emptying of ourself and that time for contemplation, it's now a very necessary part of my own day. So the first weekend that I was doing the show, for example, when I was on the air and, you know, working on the timelines and the all the how-tos and everything else and thinking about who I wanted to have on the show, I was neglecting my writing portion of who I am. So I felt much like a erupting volcano that needed to just sit with pen and paper to write. And as I began writing, my thoughts kind of flowed onto the screen and I began this inward prayer and this examine, so to speak, that Ignatian examine for why I need to write. Why, you know, that has become a part of my own spirituality. So for people that are writers and find that that's a beautiful way to kind of express their day and to see that portion of their day on paper and to be able to analyze it that way, I highly encourage you to start writing or blogging or making that time in your life for that, because I think that that's essential when it comes to the people that reflect in that way. And I didn't know that I reflected in that way until I think very recently.
I think that's excellent advice to give your listeners. I agree completely. There are so many things that I didn't know until I wrote it down, until I started writing out whatever was going on. And I really have discovered things. So I agree that that's a great thing for anybody to do who wants to do a reflective examine, who wants to grow closer to God, or who just wants to explore what's going on in their own hearts.
Well, we are going to take a break, but when we come back, we will chat more with Margaret Felice here on An Engaging Faith on You Supported Real Life Radio. Engaging Faith with Elizabeth Reardon here on Real Life Radio. Now, speaking of real life radio and all the abilities to tune in, there is an app for that, an easier way to help you locate and listen to your favorite shows, podcasts, news, and events. And just launched our GoFundMe for upgrades to the Real Life Radio app. We have so many amazing people here sharing of their hearts to spreading God's word. So please consider a donation today to further this incredible evangelization work. Just simply go to www.gofundme.com/reallifeappeal. Be a part of the new evangelization that is taking place today. Now, before the break, we touched on your blog and the different things that motivate you and inspire you. But I know that one of these things is your love of music. And that is something that helps you to, quote unquote, keep your day job as well and enjoy the passion that you love for yourself. So can you tell us a little bit about, I know that you served with the Boston Conservatory and that you're also public relations chair of the Boston Opera Collaborative and assistant director of liturgical arts group at Boston College and director of liturgical musicians at BC High. So tell us about how all of these things kind of feed and nourish you as well as kind of support you in your faith.
Well, one of the things that I've noticed in all of these different involvements, and the two that I'm doing right now are working with the liturgical arts group at Boston College. There are three directors, and I'm the lowest on the totem pole, which is fine with me because I get to work with two really marvelous liturgical musicians. One is full-time and then one is part-time, who are also in that office. And I also direct the liturgical musicians at BC High. My work with Boston Opera Collaborative was a few years ago. I was the president of the group for 2 years, and then I was public relations chair for 2 years. But what I learned then and what I continue to learn now is that being with people is so energizing for me. And obviously, creativity really lights my fire, which is why I write and I plan prayer services and I design curriculum and I sing and conduct. Obviously, creativity is really important for me, but the community aspect of creativity is equally important. So all of these involvements, all of these opportunities to come across really phenomenal artists in all different fields, that involvement is something that's really shaped me and something that really motivates me. And that's probably the main reason that I decided to stay in Boston after I finished at Boston College, was that there's so much art, there's so many artistic opportunities, and it's just a really great place to be without being as overwhelming as some of the big, big cities.
Now that's an extrovert. Yeah. Part of you, right?
Can you tell?
And that's why we get along so well. I think I told a very close friend of mine recently that, you know, we were kind of discussing our own private hell, so to speak. And I said, well, that would be putting me on an island all by myself with no one to talk to. So, you know, people as well as, you know, our passions and the things that we're good at, just being in that community, I find as well, is so needed. And for those that might not understand that community aspect, when it's necessary, when they have it, and they can kind of appreciate that gift of being in community, I think that is when they recognize that it's missing in their life.
Yeah. And a lot of that comes down to finding the right community. If I weren't surrounded by so many wonderful people, maybe I wouldn't indulge my extroversion quite as much. I've been very lucky.
Right. And one of the things that you enjoy that I was so excited, you know, to notice about is your Tanglewood chorus that you do.
Yeah.
Because I've been to Tanglewood. I used to take groups of Japanese students to hear and listen to Tanglewood. Only unfortunately, I was stuck in the half shell, which I would much prefer to have been on the grass.
Yeah. Well, we've got to get you back out there then.
I know, definitely. It's the only way to listen, you know, sitting on the grass with a blanket under the stars with a bottle of wine.
And again, a whole group of people around you that you're sharing the experience with. I've sung with Tanglewood Festival Chorus for, gosh, probably 10 years. And they're great. It's a huge roster of singers. So they just pull the people that they need for particular concerts. So you're only as committed as you're able to be. And we sing out at Tanglewood, which is the summer home of the Boston Symphony. It's out in Western Massachusetts. And I often quip that when musicians die and go to heaven, it looks like Tanglewood. Everything about it is just perfectly maintained and curated, and it's peaceful and creative. And there is a shed with a huge stage, but then there's this large lawn where people sit on the lawn and listen to live orchestral music on summer evenings. But the chorus also sings for concerts in Boston at Symphony Hall. They sing Pops concerts. And I have been really lucky to sing for a couple really exciting events. The Democratic National Convention.
And the 4th of July and Red Sox opening day.
Yeah. So it's put me in some places that I never, ever expected that I would go. It's really been a lot of fun. And as many times as I walk into through the stage door of Symphony Hall, it doesn't ever lose that thrill of being in a place where so many musicians have made their mark.
And I think for the Boston Symphony Hall for the 4th, is it entering its 130th season, I believe?
Oh, and my gosh. I couldn't tell you, but that sounds...
Right?
Right?
I remember, I think it was last year we were close, so I think that's correct. And I know that they have, goodness, probably 500,000 people that attend.
Mm-hmm.
And with at least a third of them from out of state.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, Tanglewood is so close to the New York border that there's many people from New York, but it's also, there's the Tanglewood Music Center and the Boston University Tanglewood Institute that are both learning programs for different age groups that are either on the grounds or nearby. So those bring in a lot of students from all over the country and all over the world as well.
Now, for Red Sox opening day, how is that? I know that that was part of, and you touched on that earlier, the Boston College 150th annual sesquicentennial mass, and that was with Father Michael Himes from BC. So there is that thought that the site itself, that Fenway might be the attraction, but that the mass element might get lost. So I was curious to see, like, what was your experience? Did you feel that mass was still kept and maintained as the main attraction?
I'm so glad that you asked about that because it's such a memorable day. So to celebrate the 150th anniversary of the founding of Boston College and Boston College High School, that were a single entity before they split in the early 1900s, we began a year of activities and celebrations with a joint mass at Fenway Park. And I think everyone had the same question as you did. How is this going to go? Is it going to feel like a time of holiness and a time of prayer? And even a couple years later, everyone I talk to talks about that day and how the Holy Spirit was so amazingly present. It was an absolutely prayerful experience. And some of that is a testament to the preaching of Michael Himes, who you mentioned, who is such an extraordinary preacher any day of the week, but really hit it out of the park, pun intended, when he spoke for our Fenway Mass. So it was possibly more holy because we knew that we were sort of transforming a place that is not always used for prayer. Rather than feeling less prayerful, I think it may have felt more prayerful.
Well, I want to hear more about this, but we are going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to hear more from Margaret Felice, her experience with the music and faith element. And we are going to talk about how we can go and attend some of these performances if you live in the Boston area. So thank you so much for joining in, and we'll come back here on An Engaging Faith. I'm Elizabeth Reardon on Real Life Radio. You're back, and you're listening to An Engaging Faith with Elizabeth Reardon here on Real Life Radio. Now, feedback, we love it if you can join in the conversation. You can reach us live at the station at 855-949-1380. You can also follow me on my website, theologyisaverb.com, and through Twitter and Instagram and Pinterest as Theology is a Verb. Or you can email me at theologyisaverb@gmail.com as well. So we were talking with Margaret about what it is to combine that love of music and that love of faith and to integrate that even liturgically. So Margaret does a lot of leading liturgical celebrations. So Margaret, are there other things that you are doing in that capacity?
In terms of music ministry?
Yes.
I'm very busy, which is great. I cantor at my parish. I substitute cantor at a few other parishes. I conduct choirs of students as young as seventh grade and as old as seniors in college. I sing at weddings. I sing at funerals. So I'm at really important moments in a lot of people's lives, which is really thrilling. And it's also a great way to do what I love in a meaningful way.
And I would agree. And I think that one of the things that I would love to kind of impress upon people is that whatever your talents are, that there is a place for you in the church to use those talents, because there are so many different ministries that we are in dire need of help with, be it cantoring. If you have a gift of speaking, perhaps being a lecturer at Mass. If you have a gift for teaching, serving as a catechist, or deciding to lead a retreat for the confirmation groups. I mean, there are just so many different ways that your talents and your gifts can be used.
I agree completely. And it's so exciting to share ministry with many other people, working with lectors, working with celebrants. In my job as a religious educator, working with all sorts of other lay ministers and lay religious educators. And we keep coming back to this theme of people, but I think that's something that's so important and so inspiring. It really is what fuels many of us working in ministry.
We had several parishioners this year come forward with things we had never considered doing. One of which is, and other parishes do it all the time, but one of which is to have a nativity play with the very, very young kids.
Wow.
That is a gift for someone that can lead the really young to not only learn their lines, but to kind of take that time and take that part of themselves, and for the parents to donate their time as well. But what a gift it was. And, you know, the parents and the kids worked together to make the sets. And I just found that there is always something that you can contribute. And I love to see it when we add new things or when we change things up, because we're willing to kind of put ourselves out there a bit.
Yeah, I think it's important to just try things. And one of the things that's been great about my experience of singing in a lot of different settings is I've seen a lot of different things. On one of your shows last week, you were talking with a guest about visiting different parishes and realizing that it doesn't have to be the way that you've experienced it. And there's a freedom in that that shows you that there is a lot of diversity and a lot of variety that can exist within a parish community while maintaining the particular character of your parish. So I get so many ideas and so much energy from all the different communities where I sing and worship, but I also, more importantly, just am more and more convinced of the fact that there's not one right way of doing things.
Right. And one of the things I notice even with your musical career is that too is very diverse. So if we're looking, you know, you might be seeing why June has just burst into the season, and which is so true in New England, because we go through such a long winter and finally it's summer. But you might be talking, you know, or talking, singing about something like that. But then at the same time, you go and you do a stint with liturgically with the church, or you do a season with Longwood Opera, which I know is currently in season now.
Yeah, I mean, I've sung probably the most artistically satisfying role that I've ever sung was Abigail Williams in The Crucible, who I'm sure is not a stranger to most of our listeners, if only from high school English class. Right. So that's not exactly a paragon of sanctity, but it was gorgeous music, and it was such a rich emotional journey with that character. I had to dive in. This summer, I'm appearing in A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, which again is not necessarily something that one would use in their religious education or formation. I'm playing a courtesan, again, not necessarily something that I would do in my day-to-day life, but it gives you an opportunity to be a part of something beautiful, and beauty is beauty. It doesn't matter if you're singing about God, if you're singing about 17th century Puritan New England. And God is mediated to us through the experience of the beautiful and sometimes the sublime. And so, while I try to be somewhat discerning, I try not to be overly prudent or scrupulous about what I do.
Well, and I think that that's part of the experience of being authentic too, because we aren't perfect in our lives, and we reveal when we take on these roles that God is at work through all of this. I mean, if one look at Augustine, and we can, you know, you can have a whole show on Augustine alone, but his life wasn't, you know, saintly to start with, but it ended up there. So the beauty is seeing how each of these roles, though they aren't portraying a particularly pure character, they reveal that they reveal our humanity and how we move and through life and how we journey in all of this. And sometimes I think if there's someone convincingly in a role, I think they can convey that as well.
Yeah. Using the word humanity, I think that was really a perfect choice in what you just said. We've talked a couple times the past hour about authenticity, and that's something I've written a lot about on my blog, and just having a commitment to the world as it is, really finding. And I think that's an element of my Jesuit background, my Jesuit education and training. It's really accepting the world exactly as it is and not trying to dress it up or deny things that are there, and honoring that and promoting the idea that God is truly found in the world just as it is. So that comes out in art too.
Right. And, you know, if you look at the life of St. Ignatius, too, I mean, he lived a life that was very much as a soldier. And so when he put his sword down, you know, that was after a very long time of discernment, and that time where he read the lives of other people who had also journeyed imperfectly, you know, and decided that this is where God was leading him as well. So I think that as a teacher, that is one of the things that's so important for me to convey, is that sense that we are going to make mistakes, we are going to have successes, but win or lose, you know, good or bad, that God is there through all of that.
And God gives us the strength and occasionally the wisdom to make something good of whatever struggles we've had and whatever flaws we have. You mentioned Ignatius and Augustine, and you look at the two of them, and they certainly had plenty in their lives that they could have been ashamed of, and we know that they were duly ashamed after their conversion experiences, but they also made those stories into something so beautiful, both in the way they wrote about them and the way that they lived their lives. And that's part of my motivation for writing and blogging and singing, is to try to take what's there and allow God to work through me to shape it into something beautiful.
And do you notice that when you, I know that I do, that when I work with students, that sometimes they're very surprised to find that God has a use for their gifts and that God is working with their faults. Mm-hmm. I find that that's a really poignant way of saying to you that he perfects, or saying to everyone that he perfects our imperfections. He gives us a grace and adds gifts as necessary.
Yes. Works with who we are. We don't have to transform, completely change our personalities, just use our personalities for the good.
So I want to put in a plug for the Longwood Opera before we leave today. It is in Needham, Mass. And Margaret Felice does a number of performances. I think she has another one on July 28th and August 18th. If you're looking to hear some of the opera that is available and accessible and is high quality, the phone number there is 781-455-0960. And again, that's in Needham, Massachusetts. So we are going to leave today. We are so thankful to our listeners and supporters through Care to Share. Thank you so much. I'm Elizabeth Reardon here on An Engaging Faith on Real Life Radio.